Welcome to The Point. I'm Mindy Todd. Today it's bird news with Mark Faraday, science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Morning, Mark.
Good morning.
So, this is, I guess, peak time for wading birds, right?
Definitely, yes. And so, what are wading birds, Mindy?
Yeah, that's what, do you
what
mean? I was going to say. I think of flamingos when I think of wading birds, but we don't have any flamingos this week anyway, right?
Yes. Yeah, those are wading birds. Right. It's so in Europe, they might say waders are sandpipers and plovers. We call those shorebirds. For us, wading birds is herons and egrets, right? Those big, showy, anybody can get interested in these and appreciate these out on a walk. Egrets and herons. So great blue heron, snowy egret, great egret. There have been a lot of little blue herons around, which mainly young ones that kind of look like a snowy egret. So you have to look at them closely. Green herons, both species of night heron, if you can find where they're roosting, yellow-crowned night heron and black-crowned night heron. At Wellfleet Bay Sanctuary, we have had these very prominent juvenile yellow-crowned night herons that just sit out a few feet away from you at this dock when you start down the trails. I think mainly in the late afternoon, and they just sit there and you can take pictures of them in the beautiful late afternoon light. Like Peter Troll was at Bird Club last night talking about how he broke his personal record for number of species of wading birds in one spot at Bell's Neck Conservation Area in Harwich. I think he had seven species.
Wow.
And and there were some that he was missing, right? That wasn't even all of the ones that was available. So there are a lot around, and they're peaking now because, you know, they breed in the spring like most birds, and that in these colonies, most of them are colonial, and they're in these noisy colonies, often on an island. There are islands off of the North Shore in Boston area with wading bird colonies, mixed colonies of different egrets. Glossy ibis is a wading bird, and there have been a few of those around. It's like a dark wading bird. If you get a good look at them in good light, they're gorgeous, like shimmery, kind of glossy, like reddish with this kind of glossy look, and a long decurved bill. We saw a couple of those over the weekend. And so they're peaking because they're getting ready for migration. It's like the terns and the shorebirds, like everything else. They come here. They don't necessarily breed here, although some of these do breed on colonies on Monomoy and a couple of other places, but a lot of them have come from elsewhere, like the terns and the shorebirds and the warblers that are passing through right now. And they gather in our marshes to feed on the abundance that we have here on the Cape, all the fish, you know, all of these bait fish and crabs and other things. Like yellow-crowned night herons are a crab specialist, so they go out at night and they eat crabs, and we're hoping that they're eating the square-backed marsh crabs in Wellfleet that are contributing to the marsh dieback. So just about any good marsh you go to, like a nice marsh behind a barrier beach, you're going to see some of these, and there are some roosts that where you can see them kind of hanging out in the evening or in the morning as well. And so I know at Wellfleet Bay Sanctuary there have been dozens of snowy and great egrets hanging around. We had a glossy ibis. People have been reporting little blue heron. We have those yellow-crowned night herons. And these are just cool birds. These are like a gateway bird for some people. You know, maybe you're not looking at sparrows and dull, you know, confusing fall warblers yet. But these are birds that people can appreciate. And maybe it's sort of a hook that, you know, gets them into birding. I've seen that with wading birds. It's what gets people into birding. And it's what started Mass Audubon, was protecting wading birds from the millinery trade.
Wow.
Yeah.
The great blue herons, you know, you look at them and you think they look like they'd be awkward, but flying, they're just so beautiful. And I just can't even imagine seeing a colony of them. Where would the colony of the great blue herons be? There isn't any on the Cape, is there?
Well, there's one sort of secret one.
Mm-hmm. Okay, don't tell me.
But I'm not sure. I'm not sure I could find it. I'm vaguely aware of where it is. Just like back in some woods somewhere. Most people see in Massachusetts, see great blue heron rookeries, whether they know it or not, when you're like driving on Route 2 west of Boston. Yeah. There are multiple ones in those sort of woodsy, swampy suburbs west of Boston. And they particularly like to nest in an old beaver swamp. Mm-hmm. And so there's this process where the beavers come in, they dam the river, the stream, it floods an area, The flooding kills a bunch of trees. They eat the trees and the surrounding shrubs and things. And when they eat themselves out of house and home, they leave. And then eventually the dam goes into disrepair. It breaks down. The pond drains and it leaves this gorgeous, like, wet meadow. And then the bluebirds can come in and they nest in the woodpecker holes with the woodpeckers made in the dead trees. And wood ducks and hooded mergansers can do the same thing. And then the great blue herons like to nest in those dead trees in those swamps. And sometimes they're still flooded. And also great horned owls will pick one of those great blue heron nests and go into them in February before the great blue herons come back. And so you'll get great horned owl nesting, great blue heron colony, bluebirds, wood ducks, hooded mergansers,
Wow, we're going to have to keep
great
a
crested fly.
closer eye on those areas.
Great crested flycatcher. We don't have beavers on the Cape, but this is a cool thing when you go
Off
off
Cape,
Cape to these kind of richer woods where that the beavers set off this cascade that benefits so many other species. And a lot of those species were hurting when beavers got trapped out, in the kind of post-colonial period. But mostly they're off Cape, in either obvious colonies next to Route 2 or just sort of back in some swampy areas where we don't see them.
Got an email from Carol in Falmouth who says, the final oriole report of the summer. The last final sighting at my jelly feeder was September 6th. However, from September 1st on, it was one timid, smallish male, and I don't think his odds are good going forward. Which brings the question, how do flocks form? Are they inclusionary or exclusionary? Or do some species simply operate by coincidence? Like, huh, you're flying to Florida? Imagine that. Is it the same in the spring and fall migrations, or is there a more territorial? Are they more territorial in spring?
It's like when you run into someone you know at the airport. You're going to Florida too?
Me too.
Yeah, let's form a flock. Yeah, that's a big sprawling question. That's a good question. I haven't seen an oriole around my neighborhood in a while. Maybe just a week. There are a few still around, and a few will be around probably through the winter, given how it's been lately. Just probably ones that came from further north that were young and just this is as far as they made it. But yeah, orioles will still be around through October. I think we'll get new birds coming in from the north. And then, I think some birds just are always in flocks. And it really comes down to they're using a common resource. Like their food source is patchy, so they all end up in the same place. They help each other find those patchy food sources. Wading birds are like that in the Everglades. They key in on like the egrets see white from miles away and they go to where they see the white and they find the dried down pool where all the fish are. And then other bird, it's mostly shared resources, right? So they're in a place with good food, and then they all kind of when it's time to talking about songbirds, and then when it's time to start your migration after nightfall, they get up and they end up in these kind of loose aggregations where they can hear each other giving little calls. But yeah, I think they are attracted to each other because they're like, hey, just like people are. You see a bunch of people like, oh, maybe there's a buffet. Is that an
Come
open
in.
bar?
Yeah,
I'm
wow.
gonna go there. Look, there's a bunch of
What are
people
they
there, right?
doing?
And so the birds are the same way, yeah.
866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More bird news coming up. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News this morning with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number for your bird comments, questions, stories. We'll also talk about other critters. 866-999-4626, our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. So we still have the hummingbirds around, Mark, and I have a great little hummingbird story for you. They're so cute, and I don't know how many actually are in my yard. I see one. But it could be more than one. But I was out in the yard watering some of my potted plants, and the water spilled over onto the hydrangea behind it. And this little hummingbird used a leaf like a bird bath. It was in there as I was watering. It was the cutest thing, just in there, that little bird, just like, oh, I'm gonna have a little bath now on this leaf. So cute.
Yeah, when you're tiny, You could do those. The world is your oyster.
Yeah. It almost reminded me like
You
the
could
little
also use an
fairy
oyster,
world. Yeah.
right? And you could use a leaf as a bath.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're so fun. I mean,
Yeah.
they have so much personality, and they no fear seemingly of anything big. They're definitely not afraid of anything bigger than them.
They're faster.
And they're faster than everything, every bird. In short distances, they're faster than a peregrine falcon. And they're just fearless, and they'll come up and they'll just look at you and then they're gone. Like, look at
Look
your
at you.
ear. Is that a flower? No, I'm on. Okay,
They
I need
look
to
at
be
you
over
and go,
here.
"Oh, sloth, I'm faster than you."
Yeah, right. You're like a tree. But I've been getting these questions from multiple people this year about why they're afraid of yellow jackets. And I don't know. I mean, it's weird to see them be afraid of a yellow jacket and then go chase away a red-tailed hawk, which they do. Someone was saying they saw one doing one the other doing that the other day. So I don't know. Maybe they can get stung. I mean, yellow jackets are pretty aggressive, and there's often a lot of them. I mean, maybe that's it. They're afraid of getting swarmed or something like that. I've never seen that happen, but it does seem out of character for something that is so fearless to lose battles to these little bugs, at a hummingbird feeder where they're kind of swarming around. But I just got multiple questions about that this year, so I thought I'd talk about it.
And they'll be around for a little while longer, right?
Yeah, mid-September is typically when they were gone historically, but I often get my last sighting in the first week of October sometime, and I leave my feeders up because as I'm talking about ad nauseum on the air here. We get rare hummingbirds in the late fall and winter, and so I leave my feeders up in hopes. There's someone in Harwich who's had multiple visits from different rare hummingbird species from out west. I'm like, damn it, I'm in Harwich. Why
Why aren't they
I leave
coming
my
to
feeder
mine?
up?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then we try to buy pineapple sage, which is that kind of weird annual that stays blooming through November and into December. And if you ever see that in a community, like a sunny community garden, then you should really watch for, later on in like October, November, even December, you should look for a hummingbird after when you would expect to see ruby-throateds anymore. And you're in some sunny community garden with pineapple sage or black and blue salvia or something, some obvious hummingbird plant, 4 o'clock, cuffia. Look for a hummingbird, and it's likely to be something, one of the rare Western ones that comes here later in the season, like a rufous hummingbird, usually a rufous hummingbird. Look for a little bit of that kind of coppery, rusty color on the sides. Often it's subtle, but
And if you can get a
yeah.
picture, even better, right?
Well,
Yeah,
absolutely,
yeah.
yeah.
So talk about the other bird feeders. Is this about the time for the songbird to be putting up those feeders? When's the best time to for the for, I would love to put them up, but we have rats, so I don't anymore.
Right. And I know we have this conversation a lot, and every situation is different. It doesn't seem to be bird feeding with my rats. It's compost, and I took care of that. I secured my compost, and I don't see rats anymore, whether or not I have bird seed out, even though I have neighbors with chickens.
Oh,
And
wow.
so, yeah, every situation is different, and it's good to kind of like t take care of different potential sources of the problem one by one and see what happens. And we can we that's a good thing to talk about is not using rodenticides. If you
Right.
do have a rat problem, take away the sources of the problem, get your have someone fill the holes in your house.
Yep.
It oftentimes that's all you need to do. And then outside, secure your compost. That was all I needed to do. It took an hour and my rat problem went away.
Oh, that's
I used
good.
hardware cloth and zip ties just to make sure they couldn't get into it anymore, into the bin. But there are, I'm sure there are situations
Yeah, my
where
neighbor
they're
feeds the
attracted to the
birds
bird
and
seed.
throws stuff on the ground, so that's my problem. And they
Yeah.
come under the fence. They go, "Hey, we got this food source here, and we'll just come live under your shed next door."
Yeah, and you're in kind of a denser suburban
Yeah,
neighborhood where there's a lot of
exactly.
trash cans out and
Yep,
that kind of thing.
yep.
It's often trash is more of the issue. But then they will take advantage of the bird seed. So anyway, some people feed year round, some people don't do it for the summer. But if you took a break, this is a good time to start again. It's cool mornings, and as soon as I put seed out, they were swarming. You know, the chickadees and things were swarming again. If you can't do seed, have a bird bath full.
I do bird baths, yep.
Yeah, you can do a hummingbird feeder, even if you can't do bird seed
We
because
have
of
done
a
that, yeah.
community doesn't allow it or whatever. But bird baths are important. No one's gonna tell you to take down your bird bath, I don't think. But yeah, this is the time, and you know, the local chickadees and titmice and nuthatches and all the young ones are fledged and out and around, and they're looking to imprint on food sources for the winter, I think. And so it's a good time to get that going. Right away I had stuff swarming, and I have a little window feeder, you know, that the kids can see when they're sitting at the table,
Those
and
are fun.
I can't keep that full. It's, you know, they're little and it's just like every other day that's empty. But my problem is chipmunks. And if anybody has any ideas, I want to crowdsource this. My neighbors down the way have slinkies on the metal poles, the like shepherd's crook kind of poles that they have some feeders on out behind their house. And I wonder if that works, or if the chipmunks could just climb up under the
Yeah, under the
slinky.
slinky. Yeah, it's a good question. Maybe somebody knows and they'll call in and let us know.
Yes,
What do you do for
chipmunks.
the chipmunks?
What do you do for chipmunks? Because squirrel-proof feeders don't work on them. There's a hummingbird right outside my window right now. What, you know, the squirrel-proof feeders don't work because they're too light. They get in if you have like the cage around it. There's that kind of physical thing where barrier
Yeah,
with the
they're
cage around the
small, yeah.
feeder. They can get into those.
Yeah.
They climb up the poles very easily, and they jump onto things. And so, has anybody figured out something
Yeah.
that works for chipmunks?
And if you do, give us a call at 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. You can also send us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org, and we'll have more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. It's Bird News with Mark Faraday, Science Coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. All right, Mark, Dan has this issue in his yard. He wants to know what's going on. He said several dozen grackles swarming his bird feeders and his bird bath on a regular basis. He wants to know what is that all about, these swarms of grackles?
Swarms of grackles. Before we get to that, I have something I want to talk about, Mindy.
Okay, what's that?
The tote bag. I didn't know there was a tote bag.
It's
I
brand
don't have a
new.
tote
It's
bag.
brand
Who do you
new.
got to know? Who do I got to know to get a tote bag around
We'll
here?
figure it out.
It's because I never go to the studio anymore.
I
I look at the
know.
cool
See, you
stuff.
should come back.
All right, Dan and his issues. So yeah, that's what grackles do this time of year. And I was just thinking about how I haven't been seeing the usual number of grackle swarms, and it often st it starts in midsummer sometimes. A lot of these blackbirds and starlings, which are not blackbirds, they start flocking up really early, earlier than you would think. And as it gets into fall, these grackle flocks get into the thousands. And I see this in my part of Harwich, and I think they're eating acorns. They're going through the oak canopies, eating acorns, and they'll come through your neighborhood, and it's very Hitchcockian, because
That's
there
what
might
Dan
be
said.
three,
Yeah, it's like Alfred Hitchcock.
yes, there might be 3,000 grackles, and they're big, noisy birds, right? This isn't chickadees. They're big, and they're knocking acorns down, and they're falling in your car and whatever. And it's like, whoa, and then they're gone. You know, a few minutes later, they just sort of come through like a marauding horde. And that's just what they do this time of year. They're very much a flocking, you know, blackbirds by nature are in flocks during the non-breeding season. The vast majority of the year, blackbirds are in flocks, and then they nest, and oftentimes they're nesting in places with other blackbirds, and then they're back into flocks for migration, and then in winter. And so yeah, it can be striking, and people don't like grackles because if they have feeders that the grackles can get into and empty out.
They wipe it
It's one of
out,
those
yeah.
things where we're like, we say bird feeder, but really we mean certain birds. You know, people are sort of elitist about what they want, what birds they want eating the seed they put out. And grackles are not, don't make the list. Like, hey, you're not on the list.
Yeah, you're out. Yeah. All right. Let's talk to Tom, giving us a call from Harwich. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, if you have your bird feeder on a shepherd's hook, You could smear it with Vaseline and they can't climb it.
Ooh, the chipmunks, yeah.
All right. Does that work? So, thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad somebody is already coming through with ideas. We need ideas. I tried that once years ago. For I think it was for squirrels mainly. Have you done this and you've seen that it definitely works?
The squirrels will keep climbing it until they've worn it off. So
Yeah.
they keep the but it doesn't hurt them. I mean, they could lick it off
Yeah.
their fingers and
Yeah.
but
Yeah.
I
And their
wouldn't
skin has
use
never been more supple.
WD-40.
Yeah. Yeah, they're
That was my
determined.
mom. Vaseline was my mom's primary beauty secret. Yeah, she just old
Yeah.
school. She
Oh,
Vaseline
works
every night.
wonders,
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used
It's good stuff.
to suggest that you swallow a teaspoon a day.
Oh.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Petrochemical.
Exxon. Health tips from Exxon, because it is a petroleum product. Who better to give you health advice? Yeah.
Tom, thanks for
Oh,
that.
thanks.
But
Thanks
yeah,
for helping the show.
Tom's got a good point though. Those squirrels, they're determined. They do not give up. I don't know about the chipmunks, but the squirrels definitely do not give up. So,
Yes,
yeah.
I know.
All right. So, not quite fall, but the fall seabird show is on, right?
Absolutely. And so, right, the terns are staging. We've talked about that a lot. All of these terns, these delicate seabirds that dive for fish and they nest in these big noisy colonies that away from where most of us can see them, like on Monomoy National Wildlife Refuge. Great Gull Island down in Long Island Sound is a huge tern colony, and then little islands in Buzzards Bay and up and down the main coast up into Canada. So the terns nest on these islands, and then after they're done breeding, they get into these staging flocks at places like Race Point, Hatches Harbor, Nauset Beach, the other barrier beaches in Chatham, Monomoy, Plymouth Beach, places like that, the islands, parts of the islands. And they're in these flocks, and the young ones are kind of still begging, and they're learning how to fish, and the adults are fattening up on sand lances, the same things that the humpback whales are eating, and the stripers, small menhaden, the peanut bunker that the stripers are chasing, the terns are going after the same thing. And so our waters are really rich this time of year, and all of these birds and whales are taking, and fish are taking advantage of all that bait fish. And so following these terns are the Jaegers, and birders love Jaegers, especially birder guys. Yeah, the Jaegers, they're like manly, they're tough, they're fast. You know,
And they're
there should be
pretty, yeah.
a sports team. I don't know why there aren't any sports teams
Hey, yeah,
named after the Jaegers.
that's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, I mean the Cardinals, I mean that's a pretty wimpy bird. I mean
Yeah.
they mainly fight their own reflections in your rearview mirror, but Jaegers are like tough athletic birds.
Yeah.
They kind of look like an immature gull. They're like a brown pointy winged kind of gull-shaped bird. But you watch them and they have higher gears than all the other birds, right? They're like sports cars out there and they're chasing the terns. And I was watching this. I led a field school for Mass Audubon over this past weekend, and so I was able to get out birding Friday afternoon through Sunday, more than I ever would, and it was great. And we got out to Race Point, and there's all these terns there, and they were mostly roseate terns, interestingly, this federally endangered bird that nests in islands in Buzzards Bay. But there were all these roseate terns out there, and the Jaegers were just marauding. These parasitic Jaegers, they nest up on the Arctic tundra, eating lemmings among other things, and then they turn into these seabirds that just harass other birds and steal their fish. And these terns were giving up their fish without much of a fight. The Jaeger would just kind of like come up behind them, and the terns were like, take all my money, and then
Yeah.
run away, right? Because this is a mugging, right? This is a mugging on the open ocean. And they drop their fish, and then the Jaeger just picks it up, and they don't have to do any work. They spend a lot of energy chasing the terns, and it's a spectacular thing to watch because they go up and they go down, and it's like things a fighter plane
It's like
can't
an
do,
aerial
like the most
show,
advanced.
yeah.
It's an aerial show, and they really can maneuver in ways that no aircraft anybody has designed ever can do. Hairpin turns, and it's really fun to watch. And so we got to watch that. And the shearwaters are still around. These birds of summer whale watches, right? The Cory shearwaters and Great shearwaters and Manx and Sooty shearwaters. They're all still around, and they're out there going by, and all the gulls, lesser blackback gulls, are out there, which are kind of interesting. There was a Caspian tern out there, and so there's this regular show of the terns and the Jaegers and the shearwaters, and then there are interesting things that could turn up at any second, like a brown booby. Something. This is a tropical seabird that has been becoming more regular. And Blair Nicholas saw one out there. There was a brown pelican at Squeteague Harbor. Someone else at bird clubs reported a brown pelican off of Nauset Beach. So you've got to be watching, right?
Yeah,
This
so
is stuff's moving and
keep your
weird stuff
eyes
is
open.
everywhere.
866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. More after a break. You're listening to The Point, and with me this morning is what Wayne calls that nut, Mark Faraday. I think he meant it in a nice way, a good nut.
Jeez, getting roasted here. I'm a roasted nut.
So Jenny Junker, who is the artist on the new tote bag, she wants to know if you approve of the choice of the terns. They didn't ask you before, but they're asking you now.
Yeah,
and,
I mean,
and
geez.
For the subject of the CAI tote bag, and she goes, "What do you love about terns?"
That's a good question. And yes, I was not consulted on the design. I feel
That was
slighted.
a mistake. Yeah.
But turn, yeah, you can't go wrong with terns. I mean, and they are iconic to this region. It was a good choice.
It was a good choice.
I mean, we really, I don't think there's a more important place for terns from like the mid-Atlantic to maritime Canada than Cape Cod. And I love terns just because, you know, they're these delicate, elegant, graceful little birds, you know, compared to the gull. The gulls are brutes. People don't like gulls. They do brutish things. But the gulls have their charms too. But the terns, they don't bother anybody. They just go out, they work hard, they catch fish, they bring it back to their young. They don't steal anything from anybody. And then they go to South America. They have these spectacular migrations. Arctic terns, well known for a long time, they had the distinction of having the longest migration of any bird. They go from the Arctic to the Antarctic, really, some of them. And that's just incredible, how much they fly and how much they span the globe. So I love all of that about them.
Good.
It was a great choice. And I haven't seen it. Can I Google it up? Like, I
haven't
even seen a picture.
You can go to the website and see the picture. I was trying to show you a picture here on our little Zoom thing. But yeah, it's kind of hard to
very nice.
Get it to focus. But yeah, anybody can go to the website and see a picture of it. So capeandislands.org.
And I like it.
Yeah. And this is a good time to be thinking about planting, like for birds and pollinators, you know, those shrubs and perennials that will attract birds and pollinators, right? Good time for
absolutely
that?
Yes. You know, all the gardening people tell you this is the best time to plant. The soil is still warm and they develop their roots.
I just planted a tree.
But it always coincides with the stock at the nurseries being sort of picked over and things don't look good. But they will tell you that even though things don't look good, you know, their roots, if they have good roots, then they'll come back strong next year, and just have some faith. And so when it comes to, we'll start with birds. When it comes to planting for birds, and anything you do for birds benefits bees and other insects. That's kind of the whole point, because the birds eat the insects and the insects pollinate the flowers that turn into the fruits that the birds eat in migration and in winter. It's all connected, obviously. And so you get the best bang for your buck with landscaping for wildlife by starting with trees and shrubs. They tend to be lower maintenance once you get them through the first couple of years. And so I actually went and I made a list, because when I try to do this off the cuff, I always kind of struggle and I forget things. And so first of all, things that provide the insects that they need. That's the most important thing, are plants that provide the insects that the birds need to live and to feed their chicks and to actually fledge their chicks. Otherwise, it wouldn't be any birds. And that's, you know, oaks, cherries, willows, the pines, any of the native trees that are on your lot. You want to leave those to as best you can. And if you have, and then they host the caterpillars, mostly moth caterpillars, that are what birds are eating and feeding to their babies through the seasons, as well as the grasshoppers and the katydids and all of these other leaf munching insects, and the insects that eat those insects, like spiders, that the birds are feeding to their babies, right? So that's the base of the food chain. Oaks, cherries, willows host tons and tons and tons of caterpillars. So, and then there are the fruit-producing shrubs that we think of more commonly as things you can add to your landscape to help birds. And so the first ones are shadbush, service berry. It has a bunch of different names. The genus is Amelanchier. You see them blooming in May. They're delicate little white flowers. They're all along the side of the road. You never notice them before or after that. But they flower in June and July. I mean, they fruit in June and July. They fruit pretty quickly. And then that's one of the first things that birds around here can eat. They're often kind of spindly in the wild, but if you can get one in a sunny spot in your property, I've seen spectacular individuals with tons of fruit that are covered in birds as early as mid-June. If you can find a mulberry somewhere that's native, mulberries are incredibly attractive to all kinds of birds because they fruit also early in the summer when nothing else is fruiting really. And if you can find a red mulberry, a native mulberry, you might probably have to mail order it. And then it might be a few years. And if you have some patience, then eventually you'll be richly rewarded. It'll be just absolutely full of birds in summer because again, nothing else is fruiting then. Viburnums, all the nurseries have, arrowwood viburnum and other viburnums, and they fruit in kind of the second part of summer. And the catbirds and other birds are just devouring those. Black cherry, people don't like black cherry, Prunus serotina. A lot of people call it choke cherry, which is wrong. That's a different species. But the black cherries are everywhere. But if you have them in your yard and they produce fruit, then you'll be rewarded with lots of birds in a good fruiting year. This did not seem to be a good fruiting year for black cherries, but when it is, they're full of orioles and flickers and bluebirds and catbirds and all kinds of things. Blueberry, of course, highbush blueberry. A lot of the birds, they kind of get into the blueberry swamps, disappear into those swamps after they're done breeding and eat all the blueberries. Two that you might not know that are really, really good are silky dogwood and gray dogwood. And I wish they were more common in the nursery trade, but if you go to any of the native plant nurseries, they're starting to have them more. I think Sylvan sometimes has them, but there are three, I wish we had some on the Cape, but there are three native plant nurseries on the South Coast. There's Tree Talk Natives and Rochester is new. Bluestem is more South Shore. That's in Norwell. And then there's Butterfly Effect Farm in Westport. So these are places where you can get some of these good native trees and shrubs
And
that are hard to get
you
at the
can ask.
commercial
They're
places.
very knowledgeable, and they'll tell you, you tell them what you have, and they'll be happy to make suggestions for you. Mark Faraday is the science coordinator at Mass Audubon's Wellfleet Bay Wildlife Sanctuary. Joins us the second Tuesday every month. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. Catch you next time.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.